Welcome to More in the Word, a podcast of More Theological College in Sydney, Australia, that seeks to glorify God through biblically sound, thought-provoking, and challenging talks and interviews. In this episode, from an interview Veronica Hoyt, director of the Priscilla and Aquila Centre, conducted earlier in 2025, Danny Trewick, postdoctoral theological researcher, author, and speaker, recounts her journey to faith and journey to ministry, and how things haven't quite turned out the way she thought they would. We hope you find the episode helpful.
Thanks, Danny, for coming this morning. It's so lovely to have you here. Just for the sake of our listeners, I'm Veronica. I have just come on to the team at More College as the director of the Priscilla and Aquila Centre, and it's really lovely to be able to interview Danny Trewick here this morning. So welcome, Danny.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Yeah.
How about if we just start with you just telling something a little about yourself first?
Sure. Well, I'm Danny, technically Danielle, but only Danielle to my mother when I'm in trouble. Otherwise, Everybody else has always just called me Danny. I'm a Sydney girl, born and bred, not too far from here. Between the airport and the beach is how I like to describe where I grew up and where
it's
currently live.
It's a very handy location.
It is. I went for a lovely walk on the beach along the beach yesterday, which was great. Not so handy when the planes are flying overhead, but anyway. Yeah. I'm single. I've never been married. I actually live back with my parents at the moment. I live in a self-contained apartment beneath them, which is lovely, though being the on-hand tech desk help is not something that God has ever gifted me in, but it's a job that I found myself needing to fill for my parents at this stage. I have a younger sister who's married with three children, one of whom is already with Jesus. So Matthew and Emmy are delights of my life. They call me Dee Dee, which is lovely. And Benjamin, who is between Matthew and Emmy, is with Jesus, and I can't wait to meet him in heaven. So, yeah. Yeah,
that's a real sense of longing, isn't it?
There really is. Yeah. There really is, yes.
And how did you get to know Jesus?
I have a wonderfully boring story, which is that I don't remember a time when I didn't know and love Jesus, or more importantly, didn't know that he loved me. So I grew up going to church with my mother and my younger sister and my grandmother, because it's kind of what the women in our family did. And, you know, one of the blessings here in Sydney is that you can throw a stone and hit a good Bible teaching church in any direction. Yeah. And so I actually grew up going to the same church that my mother grew up going to from when she was a baby, because she'd grown up in the same area that we were living in. And so, yeah, from my earliest days, I was hearing the Bible taught well in a small and slightly older community. It was quite a small church at the time, but constantly being taught the Bible faithfully in that context. There was a small Sunday school. There was a small early youth group. And so I never went through a period of questioning who God was, who Jesus was, and what that meant for me. Though, of course, there were formative times in that process. And particularly key for me, and I'm going to be always grateful for the rector of that church. As I said, it was a small church, largely an older congregation at that time. There was only maybe sort of three families with young children. So there might have, in the actual church itself, maybe been seven or eight kids, sort of anywhere sort of 5 years above and below me. Mm. And when I got to early teenage years, the rector took my mother aside. I have a wonderful father. He's not a Christian. He wasn't at church. So it was just my mum that he took aside, as well as the parents of another family, and said, I want to encourage you to send your kids to the neighbouring church where they have a youth group. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge sacrifice for him, as I look back now, having been in ministry myself, in church ministry, to actually recognise that was him prioritising our spiritual growth over the growth of his particular congregation at that time, because he just recognised they didn't have the people or the resources to run a youth ministry. And so that's what we did. I headed up to youth group at the church in the next suburb, which wasn't a massive church by any means, but certainly did have a lot more kids there my age. And that was a really formative time of growth for me as a Christian, because suddenly I was around a lot of other people, my peers, seeing what it was for them to walk alongside Jesus, what God was doing in their life, and being able to go, oh, okay, this is what it means. Yeah, this is what it looks like. And doing that in that community was really significant for me. So yeah, wonderfully boring story, but a wonderful story at the same time.
It's wonderful, and it's such a blessing to see how God just grew you over those years, and also because of certain decisions by others on your behalf, how God's really blessed that.
Yeah.
As we know, that path took you to Moore College. Could you tell us a bit about that in terms of the pathway that you took to go into Moore College and maybe some standout stories from your time here?
Yeah, sure. I had never really thought about ministry, let alone sort of theological training for ministry, until my early 20s. I went away to what back then, I'm showing my age here, was called a Club Five conference, which was a conference run to encourage young Christians in early adulthood to be thinking about the possibility of going into ministry. And I went along with my best friend, and I remember we weren't quite sure what we were expecting, or, you know, we drove home from that conference, and I remember the conversation so clearly. We both just looked at each other, although I was driving, so I didn't look at it too often, but we just said to each other, what else would we do? We were so convicted at that point of, hang on a second, yes, we need to think about this.
Yeah.
She went on, and she was studying veterinary science. She became a vet, married, moved back to the country. And so that wasn't a pathway she pursued, but let me tell you, she is one of the most faithfully active church members.
God's obviously given her another ministry.
Oh, incredible. That is, she puts me
a real blessing.
She puts me to shame, honestly. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that happened at that conference was that one of the people up front said, hey, we're looking for someone to work as our part-time administrator.
Oh, yes.
And I kind of went, oh, I'll have a chat about that. And before I knew it, I was working in the world of MTS, CBS at UNSW, Matthias Media. We're all kind of in this little conglomerate of rabbit warren offices. And that was also an incredibly formative time for me, particularly as I continued to think about ministry training, because I was suddenly around all these people who were taking it very seriously.
Yeah.
And I didn't do MTS at my home church, but I like to say I did MTS by osmosis, because I was very much actively involved in ministry at my church, but getting all the training that the MTS trainees were doing, because I was working for the organization that was doing that. So that was exciting. Mm. And it was very clear to me early on that if I was going to pursue this, I needed to be well equipped to do that. And Moore College was in many ways the obvious place for me, particularly because of the people who had been influential in my life. Mm. So yeah, I came, I studied here for 4 years back in the day when the single women lived at Mary Andrews College. And so that was a very, very significant part of my time here, is living in community with the women down there, many of whom are still very, very close and dear friends of mine, but also the guys at Chapo, but also the married couples living on campus on site as well. Those relationships, God has used those. He used them in the 4 years I was here, but he has continued to actually use them to grow me and challenge me and make me more like Jesus in so many ways since then.
Yeah. Are there any standout memories that you have of your time here?
Well, there's one, I mean, there's so many standout, but there's one in particular that set me on a particular direction I didn't know at the time, which was, we were in third year, and this, I guess, you know, this is someone who was very significant for me at the time, but in the years since. The ethics lecturer at the time here was Andrew Cameron.
Yes.
And we were doing third year ethics, and the topic for that week was singleness. And of course, I at this point was about 28, I think, never married, single, living with a bunch of single women. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm so glad that all the married people, particularly the married guys, are going to have to sit here and hear about singleness. They have so much to learn, and I'm so glad that they have to learn this, thinking I'm all over this. I've kind of, there's nothing he's going to tell me that I don't already know. And of course, wow, that was my hubris showing. I remember sitting in that lecture, and I was sitting next to a friend of mine who was single at the time. She's now married with four children. But Andrew Cameron was talking about how singleness here and now in some way points us towards a life of eternity when none of us will be married to each other. And I remember she and I looked at each other, and you could have like drawn a light bulb that went on over both our heads with a kind of ding.
Aha moment.
It really was.
So significant.
And all I could remember thinking was, how come no one has ever told me this before? As soon as he said it, it seemed so obvious.
Yes.
But I had never heard it before. And so, of course, I pestered him straight after class and over lunch, and he was very patient with me. But I'm sure we'll get onto this. But that ended up being actually a very, very significant moment for me that I didn't appreciate at the time because of what it would lead me or what it would lead God to be actually leading me towards down the track. So,
That's fantastic, isn't it? And so you graduated from college. Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that you've been involved in? I know you've been involved in parish ministry and in parachurch.
Yeah.
What are some things that you've been involved in?
So I sort of took the standard track. I came to college. I pursued ordination as a deacon. I was ordained as a deacon. And I finished after 4 years at college and went and worked as a women's ministry. Well, technically my title was women's ministry trainer and coordinator, which at the time I remember thinking, oh, can't I just call myself the women's minister? It's such a mouthful. But my boss at the time was exactly right. He really wanted to communicate to the women that Danny wasn't coming to do the women's ministry. Yes. Danny was coming to train and encourage and equip the women to minister to each other and to the rest of the church congregation. That was at St. Matthias at Centennial Park. So I finished college and went and worked there for almost 6.5 years. Okay. And one of the wonderful things was that Josh Kaswadi, who was also in my cohort at college, he went and started working at Matthias at the same time. So we kind of transitioned out of college together and worked as part of a team under a great boss, Warwick De Jersey, and then a team of people who kept being built up and changing around us. And that was an incredible 6.5 years. Challenging.
Do you have any stories of God at work in that time?
One of the things about me is my memory is just absolutely terrible. So I tend to think in terms of shape and trajectories rather than specific instances. But I finished there halfway through 2015. So that's almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
One of the greatest joys that I have is reconnecting with women who were at Matthias at the time, who I did Bible study with, who I met with, who I prayed with, who I was invited into their lives, young and old, all sorts of different situations. Looking now and seeing them still faithfully following Jesus and walking with him, and just being so thankful that God was pleased for me to play just a very small part of that at a very small time.
It's a real
lives.
Privilege, isn't it?
It is.
And really the bottom line of ministry is for people, once they come to faith, is to keep holding on to Jesus, to stand firm.
Yeah.
And if you see that happening,
that's right.
That's such a blessing.
It is.
And it's such an encouragement.
Yeah. And I can think of, I won't say their names, but I can think of women who were going through incredibly difficult things, you know, marital breakdowns, husbands dying, sick children, all sorts of things. Women who were single and really struggling. And it's not like 10 years later I can look back and see that God made their life perfect and none of those things mattered.
Right.
But God has held on to them.
He was preparing them.
Yeah, that's right. To be able to go, thank you, God, for giving me just the opportunity to be a small part of that and for also the way that they were part of my maturation as a Christian as well. So there are specific stories, but I think that the more important thing is actually just recognizing the fruitfulness of gospel ministry over time and the number of people who have been part of that in their life and in my life.
Yes, and just to see God's grace just working in and through them as they go through life, as you say, through some really difficult things.
Yeah.
It's a real privilege to be involved in that.
Yeah.
And also just a real joy
to
see that as you meet them down the track.
Yeah, there's the flip side of that too, which is there are some who no longer know Jesus and that hits home hard.
It does.
But again, God is the one who is sovereign in and through that. And
absolutely.
All I can be doing is praying that they'll turn back to him.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about beyond that?
Life took an interesting, unexpected turn. I finished more college thinking, okay, this is me, parish ministry for life, probably women's ministry for life, and delighted by that, knowing that I would probably be doing that in a number of different places. And then about halfway through 2015, the previous 18 months had been really hard. The senior minister had left to go on the mission field. We had a year with no permanent minister. I was at that point the oldest and most experienced member of the staff team.
Yeah.
It was just a full-on year. And I realized I could see a brick wall approaching. And I thought, okay, after a lot of prayer and discussion with friends and loved ones, I thought, okay, I think it's time to see what God has next. And so I decided that I would resign from my position at Matthias, and I was going to take 6 months just to kind of regroup, regather before looking for another women's ministry position in another church. Mm-hmm. But going back to that moment in third year ethics, Andrew Cameron and I had continued to have a chat about singleness in the Christian community and the Christian life, and how there just wasn't a lot of great resources out there. And so partway through my time at Matthias, I got an email from him. It just said, Andrew Cameron, and the subject line said, "Your time has come." And I thought, I don't know if I want to open this email, but it was him just saying, hey, let's write a book on singleness together. And I kind of went, oh, there's no way that's going to happen, but sure, I'll humor Andrew. There's no way I could write a book with Andrew. We met together and we became really excited about the possibility. But he moved from Sydney to Canberra. I was in full-time ministry. He was directing a theological college down there. It just was too hard to make it work. So I decided, all right, I'm going to take this 6 months off to regroup before I head straight back into parish ministry. But I'm going to use that time to write this book on singleness. And within about 3 weeks of deciding that, I had somehow found myself signing up to do a four-year PhD on a theology of singleness. And the reason behind that was because I thought I could write another book on singleness, and it will be another book that sits on the shelves of Coorong or in other Christian bookshops. But what is the point? Like, if I have something important to say, then I need to know not just what that is, but actually whether that is faithful to God's word.
Absolutely.
I've got this inkling, but I want to make sure it was still resonating with me. How come no one's talking about this? And if no one's talking about this, perhaps actually there's a reason they're not talking about this. And so I wanted to make sure that if I was going to start talking about it, I was actually doing that in a way that was thoughtful and faithful and consistent with Scripture. And so in talking with a few people, I determined that actually the best, or at least a way to do that, was by actually taking it seriously. And so I decided to do a PhD to write a book, which sounds insane, but I'm so thankful that God had that unexpected turn in the path for me. My plan had always been to take the time, 3-4 years, do this PhD and head back into parish ministry doing women's ministry. I submitted my PhD the week before our first COVID lockdown. And so for 18 months, 24 months there, no one knew what was going on in the world. Yeah. No churches were employing staff. I wasn't thinking about heading straight back into church. I wanted to make sure I could actually publish a book from my research. And so there was sort of 18 months there of just a holding pattern. And I thought, okay, once this holding pattern's over, heading straight back into parish ministry. But God just had other plans. And it could be that I head back into parish ministry at some point in the future. But since I finished my PhD in 2020, He has had me kind of working in the parachurch area. So I founded a ministry called Single Minded, which is a resourcing ministry to help churches and Christian communities and individuals be thinking biblically about singleness and marriage and all those adjacent topics. My PhD was published as an academic book in 2023, and I have the popular level book, which is the book I did the PhD to write, is coming out in September this year. That feels like 10 years later, here we come, full circle. But also I've had the opportunity to embark on a whole lot of other writing projects that I never would have thought about. So I'm in the process of writing a commentary on 1 and 2 Thessalonians, and I have, with some fear and trembling, signed a contract to write a theological commentary on 1 Corinthians, which is due in a number of years' time. And so, yeah, God has given me out of the blue this writing ministry, which for me is on my heart because I want to be able to help resource the church. Yeah. And as I look back now, I shouldn't have been surprised that I've become in some ways a writer, because I've always loved words. I've always enjoyed writing. It just wasn't this kind of writing that I would have expected myself to be doing. So.
Well, God's a God of surprises, isn't he, in so many ways?
He is.
And how has he been teaching you in all of these things? What sorts of things?
Humility. Humility in the sense of, I often say one of the worst things about doing a PhD is you feel like you need to spend 4 years of intensive research before you can say anything with any degree of confidence on any topic. That's kind of what doing a PhD taught me. And so there is a humility that comes with being invited by people to produce resources or speak into or make a contribution to the formation of Christian people.
Yeah.
In any number of areas. And thinking, that's a huge responsibility. I mean, it's the same in parish ministry too. Yeah. It's a huge responsibility. Yeah. It's just that I think God taught me the parish ministry humility in those first 7 years, and now he's teaching me the same lesson again in a different context. And so that's been something that he's been teaching me.
Mm.
I think he's also, I've always been someone who has appreciated knowing the little box that I stand. I feel comfortable and safe walking on familiar ground.
Yes.
And being in a box that I know here are my limits, everyone knows what I'm doing here. That's been scary because that hasn't been my life for the last 10 years. Mm. It's fairly unusual to have a woman doing a theological PhD, unusual in the sense that there's not a lot of women who do it or have the opportunity to do it. There's not a lot of women in parachurch ministry, particularly directing parachurch ministries. There's not a lot of women doing theological writing and resourcing. So in one sense, God has been teaching me to be thankful for the gifts and the skills that he has given me, to be discerning about those things too and how to use those. But he's also been teaching me to keep relying on him when I feel at times quite insecure and alone and a bit isolated. One of the best things about working in parish ministry was working on a team of people and you're all working together for the same objective, even as you have different responsibilities. Mm. A lot of my time is spent in my own head and engaging with the work of other people rather than with those people themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And that can be really challenging and compels me to really keep trusting in my relationship with Jesus and trusting that even as I can't see the end of this path that God has me on, that he knows where it's going.
God's working his purposes through it, isn't it? It may not necessarily be an easy path.
No, or a known one.
But it's one that he's determined is good for you.
That's right.
And is also good for this time and in this season in your life, but also for us here in Sydney and beyond.
Well, I hope so. I just want to be able to play my small part in helping to grow the church and play my part as a member of that body according to the kind of member that God has made
me. God has made you to be.
Yeah.
So in your ministry now, how have you been able to be involved in the local parish, the life of the local parish?
Mm-hmm.
What sorts of involvement have you had? How have you seen that play out in the life of a church and potentially even in the lives of people?
Yeah. That's one of the struggles with parachurch ministry.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think particularly as a woman in parachurch ministry, and also because this all happened very organically after I finished my PhD. It wasn't something I'd set out to do. And so I was kind of exploring things as they came along. And it also happened in the COVID years, which made things tricky for all of us
online,
in so many ways.
It? Yeah. Yeah.
And that also meant that the church congregation I was a part of, we weren't able to return to our building once we were allowed to come out of lockdown because of the size of the building. And so there was also a reshuffle of church family at that point too. We ended up splitting into two and going up to, we were part of a broader parish. And so we ended up going to the other church. And so suddenly I kind of found myself in a new church family in lots of ways too. So it was just a very challenging time. And to be honest, I'm still trying to work out how do I serve well at the church I'm at alongside doing this other parachurch. And my parachurch stuff is really scattered too. So, you know, they're single-minded.
Yes.
There's the writing. I work 2 days a week as the diocesan research officer. It's not really parachurch ministry, but again, it's a different sort of ministry. And so there's not a lot of cohesion between those things, let alone between those things and being a member of a local church. And so one of the things that I did 2 years ago was I had moved from the inner west back to Pagewood. And I stayed at my church because I thought I don't want to lose a relationship there. I want some continuity. But I discovered after about 18 months that I was really struggling with the distance, the geographical distance, to feel like I was embedded in the lives of people there. And it was very easy for me not to be as actively involved in serving my local church because of that. And so there I was speaking at single-minded events, talking about the importance of being members of a local church who are committed to that church's family and really struggling with that myself. And mm-hmm. I thought, I'm in danger of becoming a hypocrite here. And so after a lot of prayer, I decided to move to a more geographically closer church to me so I could be more actively involved in the lives of the people there. And that was a hard call. It was hard to say goodbye to people that I loved and a church that I loved.
Yes.
It's been really hard to start a new church and, yeah. and to build all new relationships mm-hmm. from scratch. And so I've only been at my new church for about a year, so I'm still slowly trying to work out what does that look like on the ground. And I'm part of the hosting team, the welcoming team.
Yeah.
I love the Bible study group that I'm a part of, but I am still trying to work out, okay, how do I take these gifts that God has given me to serve in this kind of parachurch area and deploy them well for the sake of the family that I'm a part of. And so one of the ideas that I haven't even spoken to my minister about yet, but I'm kind of toying with is maybe helping come alongside women in my church to help them learn that they too can be theologians. What does it mean to actually think theologically as a woman? And that this is something that all of us should be doing.
Yeah.
We're all theologians. So, you know, there's a possibility to explore there, but it can be really hard. I don't think anyone had prepared me for that complexity of working in parachurch ministry is still very much wanting to be deeply embedded in a local church community, and marrying those two things
yeah.
well is a challenge. And I think it's also a challenge for me as a single woman
yeah.
because I have to work out how to do that. I don't have someone helping me or us working it out together.
That's right, yeah. or even that you come together to this that's, new church, yeah. this new environment. And
yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's also wonderful opportunities in being single absolutely. In that too. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Mm. So still thinking about your parachurch ministry, you mentioned that when you were at college, you had this aha moment yeah. in terms of what it means to be single and this beautiful theological truth about singleness that is just so important for us as a church to think about. Have you had people who've had similar aha moments that you've been part of or that you've seen or that they've communicated back to you?
On that topic?
Yeah, just more broadly, you know, in terms of the ministry of being single.
Of being single, yeah.
But there could be other things. It could be single people. It could be married people. It could be people who've been married and are single again. There's a lot of, you know, we're very diverse as Christians.
Yeah.
Are there people or things that you can think of that have really shaped them in some ways?
I hope so. I mean, again, my experience tends to be recognizing the broad shape that God is doing as I think about this. Through single-minded, we have been able to equip and train and encourage a whole lot of people to be thinking more biblically about singleness. And so there's been lots of aha moments along that way. But again, because it's happening in a parachurch context, you often don't have those personal relationships that you have in parish ministry where you sit next to someone and see that aha moment for them. And so that's for me, I think, why it's been much of more of, I think, of the trajectory as I look at how the conversation is beginning to change. We have a Facebook community group for single-minded, and I look at how both married and single Christians are engaging there and how the language is just starting to change, how people, I think, are feeling a little bit more optimistic about where this whole conversation is going than we did 8 years ago when we first started it. I've been really personally encouraged. I've had people really from all over the world reach out to me and say how much they've appreciated my book that was the fruit of my PhD research and how that really helped them. They had their aha moments that I had in that third year ethics room. And I'm incredibly humbled but thrilled that there's very well-known theologians, particularly over in the US, who are recommending my book to their students, because that's the way that we're actually going to see change in this conversation, in this discourse beginning to happen, is by ministry leaders engaging with fresh eyes, I think, on marriage and singleness.
That's great.
And so I'm excited by that. I don't think I would still be doing it if I wasn't seeing the aha-ing.
That's right.
That God is actually bearing fruit. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to think that I wouldn't still be doing it. So I am very thankful for the way that God has been bearing fruit in people's lives, not just through me, but through Single Minded and through then the conversations that people who have been engaging with Single Minded are having in their own lives and their own church communities as well.
Yeah, I agree. Even if you think you understand things about singleness, I think about myself, I was single until I was 33. So on one level, I've lived the single life before being married. At the same time, I know that through your ministry, I've become a lot sharper. And I think even in that sense, it might not be a huge aha moment, but there could be in the sense that you just have a better understanding as to why 1 Corinthians 7 is there and what it's teaching or other passages that really just help to sharpen and to grow and also just to grow an awareness of how to say things and what to say and what not to say. And I still say the wrong thing, there are times when I think, I should know better. That was a rookie error, but you still do. But, you know, in God's kindness, you learn and you trust that in grace we can still continue in relationship as we make these mistakes. But I think your work is really helpful really sharpening us and making us think about the impact of our words, the impact of decisions, the impact that one ministry decision might have on one demographic as opposed to another. There's so that we can learn.
And I do really have... The reason that at that time where I had that 6 months that I thought, no, I actually do want to do this, is because I just spent 6.5 years working in a church that had quite a few single women and not just like me, never married, but widowed and divorced women and a bunch of men as well who were in similar situations. And we were part of an incredibly loving church family, but many of them felt like they didn't know how to belong within that family. Mm-hmm. And many of them would come to me with questions expecting me to have the answers, and I didn't have the answers. And so really my impetus for all of these things that I've been, well, God has been pleased to do in and through me over the last 10 years is not just because good theology is important, but because actually good theology is really important in the lives of individuals and us together as church families.
That's right.
We are the household of God. And it breaks my heart. I think it's tragic that so many people, not just single people, but so many people feel like they don't know how or where or why they belong within that family. Mm. And I think that is a tragedy. And so I'm not just interested in playing around with big theological ideas. I'm interested in actually helping resource the church with biblical truth that actually impacts us and changes how we love each other and think about each other on the ground.
All really helpful. That's great. Thanks, Danny. Just as we wrap up, how can we be praying for you?
Thank you. As I said, I don't know where God is taking me. As someone who has always felt very comfortable knowing kind of, right, here's the plan. If I'm going to more college, I'm going to seek ordination, I'm going to go and I'm going to work in churches in Sydney doing women's ministry. 10 years later, that's not where I'm at, and I'm very thankful to be able to be doing lots of other things that I had never anticipated, but it's scary.
Yeah.
And it's also not something that provides any sort of personal and financial security. It's been 10 years since I've had a full-time income kind of thing, as an example. And so I almost imagine it like God has this path and he keeps setting down a paving stone just as I'm making the next step. And I feel convicted that he's asking me just to keep trusting him, to keep taking the next step, and he's going to put the paving stone under. But that takes a lot of energy, emotional and psychological and spiritual. And so you can pray that I'd continue to trust God in his good plans and purposes for me and be ready to recognize when there might be an exit to that path coming up, or when there is a dead end to that path and there's actually time to divert onto a completely different path. So you could pray for me as I live in this kind of limbo that I feel like I've been living in, certainly since I finished my PhD. It's been a very productive limbo, and I'm excited, an exciting one, but it's not one that is well trodden by particularly lots of other women. And so you can pray for me that I'll continue to trust God in the plans and purposes he has for me personally, to grow me, but also to help grow the body, and have the humility to recognize when he has something different in store for me as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Danny. We'll certainly pray for that. I just also want to encourage you as you walk a path that's not completely comfortable, and yet we know that it's part of God's purposes for you and for the church. I just want to encourage you in your work. We know it's good work that you're doing. And
All glory be to God.
All glory be to God.
Yeah.
I'm really thankful that God's working in and through you.
Thanks,
and through you also in the lives of many people. So thank you.
Thank you
for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to More in the Word, a podcast of More Theological College. Our vision as a college is to see God glorified by men and women living for and proclaiming Jesus Christ, growing healthy churches, and reaching the lost. This interview is just one of many from the college's 100 Ministry Stories project. For more than 160 years, More Theological College has been sending men and women into a wide range of ministries in Sydney, every state of Australia, and almost every continent in the world. The 100 Ministry Stories project helps us to remember and praise God for the work that He has been doing in the world in our times. Remembering what God has done in our lives helps us respond to our world in steadfast hope. It is our prayer that as you hear how the Lord is at work, you will be encouraged in your faith and built up in joyful assurance. Find out more on our website. That's more.edu.au/100, spelt out in numerals. If you are a graduate and keen to contribute to the 100 Ministry Stories project, we would love to hear from you. Get in contact with the communications team to express your interest or to find out more. You can find out more and register by going to the More College website, more.edu.au. If you have not already done so, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast through your favorite podcast platform so that you'll never miss an episode. For past episodes, further resources, and to make a tax-deductible donation to support the work of the college and its mission, please visit our website at more.edu.au. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with a friend and leave a review on your platform of choice. We always benefit from feedback from our listeners, so if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at comms@more.edu.au. The More in the Word podcast was edited and produced by me, Karen Bielhartz, and the communications team at More Theological College. The music for our podcast was provided by Mark July from Pixabay. Until next time.